Now, realistically, most people are new to this model. They want to learn a lot. We have a very involved sales and implementation staff. And the reason for that is that you can do it wrong. We've done it wrong a couple times and learned the hard way lots of things. So people want some support and they want to ask. So we oftentimes are involved even pre-acquisition.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brain damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
Hello, everybody. This is Javier Hinojo, your host of The Naked Truth About Real Estate Investing. And today I have Frank Furman on the show. He's from Atlanta, Georgia. And as you can see, my studio is almost set up. I'm still using my headset, but it's almost done. I'm like 90% done, and that'll be pretty cool. But Frank is in Atlanta, ex-military infantry officer. So he slept very warm. He had the nice five-star hotels, had the best meals in the infantry, because that's all they do. They get the best part of housing.
Don't let the secret get out.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. So really quick. So I was in the military, and I was military intelligence in the Army. And every once in a while, we had some infantry guys kind of guarding us. Like they were like our patrol or kind of our, just kind of, they were attached to us, you know, five, six guys. Man, they would love it because we actually had trucks. They just jump on anywhere. They didn't have to walk anywhere. Anyways, so that was pretty cool for them. They definitely like that. But he's a real estate investor. He's got a website, a company called Pad Split, which is pretty neat. I think they rent per room. I want to really get into that. But Frank, why don't you go ahead and let everybody know, introduce yourself, say hello.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk to your audience and certainly talk a little bit about PadSplit as well, which is certainly my day job. So I'm grew up around Philadelphia, went to the Naval Academy, and then, you know, as I say, I was commissioned in the Marine Corps and spent about 7 years as an infantry officer, did a couple tours in Afghanistan. And kind of along that way, I met my wife. I've been married almost 11 years now. And through my wife, met my eventual brother-in-law, Atticus, who's our CEO and my business partner, my co-founder here at PadSplit. So, you know, got out of the Marine Corps in 2014, and I was a management consultant with a big firm, McKinsey in London, and then came to Atlanta. And, you know, it was kind of I left consulting for a corporate job at Georgia Pacific. And, you know, it was kind of looking around. I was a little bit bored. I didn't feel 100% challenged. And Atticus, you know, my brother-in-law, he's always been a real estate investor. You know, he's been in real estate really since for the last 20 years or so. Built up a successful string of investment businesses, hard money lending, general construction, that kind of thing. But he was sort of in the same boat. He'd hand off a lot of the day-to-day of his businesses to other folks. And, you know, we'd kind of meet up for lunch and be like, hey, I'm bored. You know, what are you doing? Like, I'm bored too. You know, I went from working 60 hours a week to working a good amount less. And what are we going to do with our lives? And, you know, he's like, you know, I've had this idea kicking around the back of my head, this rooming house model, right? I've been doing it for years and years. It's always been a side hustle on a small part of my portfolio, but, you know, it's always been more profitable. It's always provided an opportunity in the market for people who don't have a lot of options. So it's very sticky, this kind of workforce housing. And, you know, as we kind of got into it, you could see how certain things have changed about the market over the past several years. He started doing it in 2009, the first one. And, you know, around technology, around the regulatory space, and certainly just the market, and that housing has gotten more and more expensive since 2009, obviously, a pretty straight shot. So rents increase accordingly. Obviously, technology has really changed. In 2009, you had what was really a cash business, money orders, very kind of low tech, especially on the low income side. But since then, I mean, everyone has a cell phone, everyone can pay electronically, there's prepaid debit, there's all sorts of, you know, fintech solutions out there. And so we're looking at it, we're like, you know, maybe this is a big opportunity. At the time, you know, we thought, man, the market's so overheated, it can never go up from here. You know, we were a couple of years too early, I'm sure. But so we just started running with it. You know, it was really kind of a side hustle at first, and then it kind of grew from there and brought on our first customers in 2018 and, you know, quit my job that year and started doing it full-time, brought on a third co-founder. He's John O'Brien, who's kind of the smart one. He's like the Stanford engineer, PhD in physics guy, mucking around with the rest of us. And you've grown since then. We're now in 8 markets, really kind of throughout the Southeast and Midwest. We've about 3,300 doors on our platform, which has been, yeah, kind of maybe exceeded our expectations. Plenty of struggles along the way. It's kind of the nature of the business, and we've learned a lot. But yeah, now about 120 folks on payroll, and yeah, trying to make it work and just kind of expand nationwide and continue to kind of grow as quickly as we can and help as many people as possible, both investors and otherwise. So I've been doing this now for, yeah, about 4 years.
Cool. So then tell me a little bit, what exactly is SplitPat?
Yeah. So,
or PatSplit.
It's okay. You know, you are not
SplitPat or PatSplit.
It's PatSplit.
Hey, so let me ask you a question. Do you have the other website too, or no? Do you have the other domain?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know if we do.
But actually, right before, you know, as soon as we hang up, go check it out. See, make sure it's available.
I may have to. Yes. So yeah, people have made that mistake. So you're not alone there. So what we are at our core is a two-sided marketplace. So think like Airbnb, but instead of being fractional in terms of time, you know, one occupancy, you know, short-term rentals, we're fractional in terms of space. So the mechanics of it, you know, they look very similar. A landlord works with us. They list a property on our platform. On the other side of the platform are renters, right, who are looking for room. They come to the site, you know, they apply to book.
This is just a room, right? It's just a room.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
And the reason that investors, you know, landlords, hosts, as we call them, work with us is that for the right kind of asset, right? It's not for every house. It's not for every neighborhood, you know, that we can get into that framework a bit. But for the right kind of asset, significantly higher yields. I mean, routinely, we see people who are doubling their yield on property. Yeah. And the reason that the renters work with us is that they're saving a lot of money, right? So a lot of times people look at this, you know, from the outside and they say, you know, that's interesting. Maybe I should talk to, you know, my kids, you know, kids share, you know, millennials, you know, they'll understand. Like, no. Talk to your grandmother. This is how people used to live. You know, if you worked in a factory in the 60s or you're a young woman who was typing in New York City, you know, you're getting your start, not earning a ton of money, you know, your own place. That wasn't a thing. You lived in a boarding house, you lived in a rooming house, you rented a room. And over time, that just both from kind of zoning regulations and culture, that kind of got taken out of our kind of public consciousness and our kind of culture. And so, you know, people look at it and say, oh, I guess it's kind of like student housing. Yeah, it is. It's very similar to student housing. It's just it's not for students, you know, and it's almost a reversion back to the way things not only used to be, but also still are in really all major cities. So, you know, one thing that we find really interesting is we'll talk to folks and say, oh, you know, I get it. That's interesting. Maybe my grandmother lived in one when she was getting her start or I was in student housing. Say, okay, but when you go to a restaurant in Philadelphia, where do you think the back of house staff live? You think they're all getting their own studio apartment? Like, that's not how it works. You know, they're sharing space. Everyone shares space. I have six people live in my house. It's not because I'm a sociopath. It's because I've got a big family. You know, unfortunately, I'm the only person who pays rent. But, you know, that's the nature of it. But, you know, so it's something that everyone does to save money. And the fact that it's more or less closed off to singles, unless they can afford a studio apartment, is kind of what kind of brought me to this business from the beginning. People talk about the affordable housing crisis, talk to people all over the country about it. It's real and it's everywhere, but it's almost an artificial constraint in that we've made this judgment to say, well, you know, for example, in Atlanta, if you want to build a new apartment, you need 760 square feet and a parking spot. Well, concrete costs what it costs, copper costs what it costs. A parking spot in the city is going to cost you 40 grand if you're a developer, 50 grand maybe. So there are no cheap apartments that are being built because how could you? You know, the cost is there whether you charge a lot or a little. So you have to make them nice. But most people don't need 760 square feet. Most people, you know, what they really want is a bed. You know, they want access to a kitchen. You know, they want access to a bathroom, and they're willing to pay, you know, relatively high fraction of what they would pay for an apartment to save money, to have easier access, a little more flexibility. And because of that, for again, the right kind of asset, investors can earn an outsized return. There's a very highly in-demand product for the renters. And it also solves some issues for communities. I mean, you know, what you see in a lot of metro areas is, you know, people, they drive till they qualify, right? You know, they can't afford to live in the city. They work in the city. So they go further and further out until they can afford the rent. And then they clog up the interstate, right? Well, now, you know, they can be in closer, be on a bus line, commute to work. It's a little bit easier, closer work more hours, spend less time on the road. And there's a lot of advantages. You don't need as much new construction. You don't need as much infill because you're essentially repurposing the housing stock that we already have, right? So, you know, over the last 30 years, housing stock has increased in size, right? The average size of a house has gone from about 1,600 square feet to about 2,500 square feet, but the size of families has decreased, right? It's gone from four people down to about 2.5. And so we have more and more space for fewer and fewer people in a house. And this is a way of kind of repurposing that space and using what we already have.
Cool. So yeah, that's pretty cool. The way you said it, it's kind of like student housing, but you know, really that's the way people used to live. Yep. 60 years ago, right? If I go in, I used to flip a lot of houses. I used to buy a house built in the 60s. I'm like, there's no open space. It's just like rooms, right? It's just like, you got your rooms, you got your kitchen. And that was pretty much it. You know, 3-2, everything's a 3-2 or 2-1, you know, 3-1, right? There was no, really no 5 bedrooms, 4 baths. You know, it's just, it didn't work. You had one bathroom, 3 bedrooms, kitchen, right? Living room. There you go. So yeah, very, very interesting. So I guess I got a lot of questions, but we're going to
send them my way.
Cool. So what's like your avatar, right? So do you guys own some of these apartments or some of these houses, or do you have like a landlord, right, that has maybe a house and they want to rent it, lease it out, or they have an apartment possibly? Like, what are you looking for?
Yeah.
Two questions there, I guess.
So our core business is just that marketplace business, right? So we work with other folks who own the assets, list them, operate them, so on, you know, similar to Airbnb. We have also, because again, our background is, you know, real estate investment, and that's, you know, kind of how we got started in this business. We have created a sidecar fund. So we do own some assets that are on the platform. Some of that is because we know how to do it. Some is it because we work with investors who have money, but maybe aren't in a market that we're in. You know, they live in New York City, want to invest in the South. You know, they're not going to operate properties down here. That's fine. And some of it's just that it's been a way for us to spur growth and launch in new markets, you know, with a little bit of control and that kind of thing. Vast majority, I mean, 90%+ of what we have on our platform, 95%+ is owned by someone else, right? And that's kind of our high growth, kind of the bulk of our business. We're in single family houses predominantly, but we are in apartments as well. So again, it's about maybe 90-10 single family to apartments. But you know, the way it's worked in multifamily, which we love, and multifamily has a lot of advantages, certainly around zoning and access to transit and parking and some of these things, already set up for shared, you know, amenities in some ways. The challenge with apartments is that they just tend to be smaller, so you get less of an uptick in rent because, you know, there aren't a lot of 6-7 bedroom apartments flying around out there, to my knowledge. But what most folks are doing is, you can imagine that kind of 60s era garden style apartment, of which there's just millions kind of everywhere. And, you know, you get a mix of units, right? You get ones, twos, and threes. And generally those 3 bedrooms that maybe are 5% or 10% of your stock, you know, they tend to lease up a little bit slower. You don't get paid a whole lot more for a 3-bedroom apartment versus say a 2 or a 1. So, you know, you still have all the liability of the turns cost more and all that stuff. And so what folks have done is say, hey, I'm going to take this 3, maybe I'll turn to a 4-bedroom. I'll repurpose a living room and get a pretty significant yield bump on the apartment side of on-site maintenance. You know, it's all sort of straightforward to do that and kind of take it from there. And obviously, since apartment complexes are valued on revenue, right, on a cap rate, you know, priced on that way, that it doesn't take a huge bump in NOI to have a meaningful benefit, you know, if you're looking to sell.
Super cool. So like, what is your, I guess, like a good asset? Like, what would it be like, hey, I got a 5-bedroom house, you know, close to public transportation. There's got to be a specific area, like an A-class area or working class area, like, what do you guys see?
Yeah, we see a little bit of everything. I mean, we're in many ways quite agnostic in that, you know, we work with investors who are retail, they're doing their first property. It's kind of a side hustle too. Big institutional funds and kind of everyone in between. So agnostic there. And as far as areas, you know, you want to list one today in this neighborhood or that neighborhood, that's fine. You know, it's just as if you want to list an Airbnb. Now, realistically, most people are new to this model. They want to learn a lot. We have a very involved sales and implementation staff. And the reason for that is that you can do it wrong. You know, boy, do we know that. You know, we've done it wrong a couple of times and learned the hard way lots of things. So, you know, people want some support and they want to ask. So we oftentimes are involved even pre-acquisition, and folks come to us and say, hey, what do you think about 123 Main Street? And we'll be, it's on a cul-de-sac, you know, it'll be really tight for street parking. Don't love it. Or, oh, you know, it's a corner lot. It's close to a bus stop. There'll be plenty of parking. You know, people will be taking the bus. That's, you know, that's great. So we have a framework for how you would look at assets. Ultimately, people can list whatever they want. Now, if Javier, you came to me tomorrow and said, hey, I've got this property, what do you think? I'm like, it's in an HOA. I'd say, man, don't do this. Terrible idea. You know, wave off. You know, they don't pay me enough to put up with these problems. But, you know, you could do it. I would just, as a trying to be an honest broker, so to speak, would try and push you towards a better asset fit. So what that looks like is, you know, like to be close to public transit, that's definitely a benefit. Like to have parking around the back is best, actually, because it's sort of off street and out of sight, out of mind. But, you know, obviously you get what you get. And that depends on how many bedrooms you have and how important that is, sure, what the neighborhood looks like. I have kind of a Goldilocks view on neighborhoods, in that if you're in a really, you know, kind of A-class neighborhood, if you will, or class A neighborhood, neighbors oftentimes aren't going to be happy, right? They don't like renters. You know, if you've ever operated, say, Section 8 properties and in nicer neighborhoods, you know, you get a lot of pushback, get a lot of complaints. Rather than calling you, they call code enforcement. You know, that's life. And, you know, that can be a major headache for investors. And sometimes they don't see it coming. Same sort of thing applies with this, right? Our residents, you know, members, they cut from the crooked timber that is humanity, you know, and that sometimes they fall short and sometimes they park like jerks, right? So if someone parks in front of someone's mailbox or what have you, someone, you know, it can make the neighbors angry, especially if they don't like renters in the neighborhood. So that being said, kind of the worst neighborhoods, if you will, and we've had investors kind of extrapolate the wrong way in that direction, where they say, hey, you know, I'm trying to buy bedrooms as cheap as possible. Man, this house is costing me nothing. You know, they're practically giving it away. I should do it here. And like, well, you know, maybe they're giving it away because it isn't worth anything. You know, maybe that neighborhood is awful. Are you going to send a plumber there on a Saturday night? Are you going to be ready to turn a room on a Friday? So you kind of want that middle ground. I like neighborhoods that have a mix of owner-occupied properties, which lends stability, but with renters too, so that people kind of get that there's, you know, you're going to have a little bit more transience and maybe tolerance of that in a neighborhood. We just tend to end up in more working class neighborhoods because of that, tend to be closer to public transit. Not always. Sometimes we have properties that do great that are in exurbs, and, you know, we have some in Jackson County, Georgia. That is not an urban area, you know, but it does well because it's right by a manufacturing center and there's kind of the demand for the product locally. So those properties have done really well, plenty of parking, you know, close to the highway, that sort of thing. So it depends. We take a very custom approach with folks, especially on their first one or two. They get the feel for it, but it's not rocket science. And we have folks who've done 200 of these, and you do a couple, you learn pretty quick.
Sure. That's awesome. So my next question would be, what do you guys, your service, right? You just connect the end user, right, to the inventory, right? Yep. And then the owner is still in charge of all the maintenance requests and all that. They don't come to you guys, right? They go to the owner for that, or the property manager.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. And most folks do use a professional property manager. We have kind of a referral network that we can kind of suggest someone in an area if you need a property manager, or, you know, a lender or insurance company or whatever. But yeah, it's the owner of the property is responsible for the property.
Yeah. So I'm looking at some of your, I'm looking at Petersburg, Virginia.
Yeah.
Right. That's one Richmond, right? So you're one of the markets, right? So some rooms are like 140, 150, 160 plus per night. So if somebody has per week, right? You know, that's, you know, $500, right? Say that's $500 a month per bedroom. Somebody has five bedrooms, right? That's $2,500. I mean,
even for an ex-soldier, you kind of got that really quickly.
Pretty close, right? Pretty close. I tell people I have a lot of brain damage, but, you know, still my math. You know, my teacher said she'd learn math because I never have a calculator in my pocket, and she lied to me. She lied to me about a lot of stuff. But anyways, that's pretty neat because that's $2,500, right? So you got a five bedroom house that you possibly buy for $400K, right? I mean, your mortgage payment on that is going to be like $1,700, $1,500, whatever it is after your down payment. So your cash on cash is really nice. I could definitely see 20s cash on cash. I mean, I don't know, but just in my mind.
Right. I mean, that's exactly right. It's not rocket science, right? It's, again, it doesn't work for every property. Smaller properties, you know, it compresses your margins. There's a ceiling. You know, we've had people, you know, truth be told, people ask, what's the ideal number of bedrooms? And I always give a weasel answer, which is, it depends. One, you kind of get the housing stock that you get, and that's that. The other thing is, depends on the neighborhood. We have a 14 bedroom house in West Atlanta. And, you know, you think about that, you're like, oh my God, that's insane. But it's formerly student housing. It's really a duplex. It's kind of seven up, seven down, two kitchens, but, you know, one front door. But there's student housing on the left, there's student housing on the right. You can walk to the train station. It's always been 14 bedrooms. So that property generates well over 10 grand a month. And, you know, you look at it and you're like, well, look, is that thing 20% unlevered return on cost? You better believe it. So yeah, I mean, there you can do 14 bedrooms. Other places, you have to be much more reserved. And so it's a little bit of a sliding scale depending on the area. You know, for example, we recently had a customer, not to air dirty laundry, but set up this property. It's 11 bedrooms, big, big house. And it's in a really nice neighborhood, you know, kind of a sort of very new build, kind of early 2000s, kind of a, you know, McMansion type of neighborhood, but solid kind of suburban neighborhood. But it's also in an HOA. And sure enough, they opened it up. That filled up really nicely. We got people in there. It was 10 of 11 within, you know, 2 weeks. And it comes on and, you know, they get a code enforcement complaint. They reach out to our team and your customer support team. And it eventually gets to me. And I'm like, I got to talk to this guy. I'm like, what were you thinking, man? You think in an HOA where, you know,
yeah, there's a tennis court.
Yeah. It's like, did you think no one was going to complain? And they're like, well, you know, like there's nothing in the HOA that says you can't do this specifically. I'm like, have you ever been to an HOA meeting? You think that they care? You know, these things are adjudicated Jerry's house on Tuesdays. You're going to get, like, they're going to find the owner. And so, yeah, there's, you can do it poorly, which is part of why we oftentimes are trying to be helpful on the front end to kind of keep people from making those types of mistakes and so on.
Super cool. Well, my next question is, I've never done any student housing. So, you know, I'm sure some of the listeners out there will be like, hey, so what if you have a rowdy neighbor, a rowdy, just, you know, how do you get somebody out? Something's dirty. You got lover boy.
You make it work. Yeah.
You got lover boy next door, you know, every night. What do you do about that?
So, mostly we try and keep it to a dull roar of craziness. I think that's kind of the bottom line. Yeah. But co-living is a challenge because people are a challenge. You know, that's not a surprise to anybody. We have some advantages and disadvantages to student living or student housing. Some of them are the same, some of them are different. So we're only singles. You know, so when I think about my experience as a landlord generally, you know, husband, you know, people ask all the time, man, I bet you have fights about, you know, this and that. And you're like, yeah, you know, occasionally. But when I think about, again, being a landlord or my life in general, you know, husbands and wives fight. You know, boyfriends, girlfriends, they fight, brothers, roughhouse, you know, close friends, roughhouse, you know, whatever. These are all strangers. So they may be petty and passive aggressive. They may give them a nasty rating on the website and so on. But for the most part, it doesn't come to blows because we don't have couples, you know, we don't have children, you know, that kind of thing, that kind of a liability issue. So it ends up being not as much of a disaster as you might think, but doesn't mean it doesn't happen. Now, what we do is, you know, people ask, you know, I bet you manage all the people. Like, well, managing people, that's a tough ask. I don't even manage myself, you know, for the most part. What we're there to do, both in terms of the technology platform and then also our kind of customer support team, is to set up structures so that people can resolve their own problems, communicate, you know, rate each other for accountability and that kind of thing. And, you know, for the most part, the host, you know, the landlord is, they're being responsive to maintenance requests, you know, that kind of thing. It's relatively straightforward. Members can kind of message between each other. If, hey, you know, Javi, you boxed me in again with your car. Can you move it? I got to get to work, you know, that kind of thing to resolve some of those issues. They have sort of that forum. They can rate each other and they can transfer. You know, that's a big part of the value proposition is that sometimes you live with someone and it doesn't work great. And that's life. You know, maybe Javi ate my peanut butter. You know, what am I going to do about it? Sometimes the resolution is I'm going to leave, right? I don't like living here. Or, hey, there's a lot of job churn in this demographic, right? If I get paid $13 an hour on this side of town and someone offers me $15 on the other side of town, I'm probably taking it, right? And hey, they can move, be closer to work, and it's kind of easy in, easy out. So look, doesn't mean houses don't get dirty. That happens sometimes. You know, we've kind of a playbook for how you sort of address that. Cleaning really has to be on the residents, you know, by and large. But, you know, in general, if you're managing it responsibly, doing what you can, doesn't mean you'll never have issues. You have issues, you know, but they're kind of manageable. You can underwrite it and kind of go from there. Now, getting people out is an interesting one. And, you know, we started, you know, we're kind of fly by night, so to speak. And for the most part, you could just have a word with someone and say, look, you didn't pay, you know, no big deal, no hard feelings, but we can evict you. Yeah, you know, or you can just go. And, you know, door one, you leave, we shake hands, you know, part as friends. No one's going to chase you. I'll write off whatever you owe. And
yeah, nothing on your credit report.
Yeah, exactly. Our hand won't be out. It won't be at a collections agency. Everyone will be happy.
Yep.
Or, you know, door two, you know, we started in Atlanta. We're, you know, we're Texas, Florida, you know, Indiana, mostly landlord friendly states, right? And you say, look, this is Atlanta, this is Houston. And we're going to evict you and it's going to be fast. And it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And then you'll have a dispossessory on your record. And every time you try and get a job, our hand will be out and, you know, so on. So, you know, most people are pretty pragmatic. Now, the eviction moratorium was not kind to that conversation. It complicated a bit because, you know, the math changes when someone says, well, sure, but if I have a year for free, maybe I don't mind that dispossessory, maybe, or maybe that won't even happen. You know, courts aren't open. But now things have kind of gotten back to normal on that front. So we kind of have gotten back to normal ways of operating. But you can evict people, you know, even from a single room, same as if someone stays in your house and overstays, you can evict them from your house like a house guest. So courts are there at a last resort. It's rare, but unfortunately part of being a landlord.
Well, my wife ain't trying to kick me out for 24 years, so I know how that
goes. Yeah, when your name's on the deed, it's really, really hard, I found. So,
no, awesome, cool. Man, this has been very interesting for me. Just, I mean, I know there's been like a room, like a shared housing model, kind of, you know, people, or even a shared room model, right? Mm-hmm. You put two people in a room, et cetera. But I've actually never even thought about or seen where, you know, like, you know, you can go to one, you know, pad split and you can put your property there, right? Or I can go find a room, right? Yep. So, that is pretty cool. I'm glad you guys are growing. This is the Naked Truth. So I got to ask.
All right.
One of the biggest mistakes. You know what? I'm going to say the biggest mistakes that a landlord. I'm going to ask what's the biggest mistakes you guys have made, but I want to ask what the biggest mistake that anybody, a landlord, has done trying to do this model. Like, what's the biggest mistake?
Oh, gosh. I don't know how much time we have. I got a whole list, but.
One that comes to mind.
Yeah. I think one that comes to mind is people. You know, I'm kind of a natural pessimist about all things, and I tend to be a wet blanket, and I like to think about why things won't work. But there's a certain breed of investor who looks at things and they say, "Oh, well, I think I'm going to be able to make it work. Mine will be different." And so, what I've seen and where people have kind of gone sideways in my mind is they say, "Look, you know, I get how it works, and I've seen them do this 6-bedroom house, and it, you know, it does this, and it's great, and it's in this neighborhood, and I understand, but I want to." I don't have a 6-bedroom house. I don't have anything. So I'll do smaller and I'll just raise the price. And then like, I'll make it work that way. And hey, maybe this area, you know, they're saying isn't going to work, but you know, if I do it, it'll be fine for me. And I'm not that person at all. So maybe this is why I find it so foreign. But yeah, we've had people who've said, you know, certainly, you know, doing one in an HOA where they're like, hey, 6 bedrooms, good, 11 bedrooms. That's much more good, you know. Yeah. Oh, they said no HOAs, but do they really stand by that? And you know, it's one of those things. It's very short term kind of centric to me, and not, you know. And look, maybe if they'd been right, I'd look like an idiot, you know. And that's fine, you know, because certainly, hey, their first month they got a huge check, and we're excited. Unfortunately, it may be the last of their checks for that house. So yeah, definitely, I would say just maybe an over exuberance on your underwriting. We've all kind of done that. I mean, I think the traditional one that a lot of people make as well is to basically think of a property like they're going to be living there, right? And so we see that manifest in a lot of small ways in that, you know, like we have a motto at Pad Split, bad things happen on couches. And the reason for that is that, you know, you think, hey, I've got a couch in my house. I like having a couch, but look, you're not going to be living here. Couches are where people crash, right? You know, someone's brother, you know, comes and just crashes. Not good. People eat spaghetti on couches and it's gross and soft surface and it's not good. Or people make babies on couches. It's all bad, right? So in our kind of playbooks and so on, we're like, don't do couches. Don't do bookshelves. You know, I like books. I like to read, but bookshelves are where people throw candy wrappers behind and they get dusty and they're hard to clean and who's supposed to clean it? And so all sorts of folks, whether it's how they spec the house or how they think about it, like, this is what I want. You know, this is what I would do. And I'm like, well, you're not going to be there. You need to think about a renter as an operator. You know, hey, I like carpet too, but you shouldn't have a carpet in a rental. You know, it's hard to clean. It, you know, it gets messed up, all the stuff. You want, you know, sheet vinyl, you can bleach that thing. You know, I like a dining table. You know, it's a more respectful posture than a couch. It's easy to clean. You know, people can share a meal, hard to make babies on one. You know, that's fine. So it's how do you think, really having a customer view, you know, and also just appreciating, I think that sometimes renters want different things than what you think. I think back, my father was a physician and worked for Villanova University, like the basketball team. And way back in the day, you know, kind of the 80s, when it wasn't an NCAA violation, you know, we'd have players over for dinner to our house. And we had this one guy, Anthony Pell, who's from the Bronx, really a tough neighborhood, you know, big guy, he's a center, 280 pounds, just this monster kind of guy, and really nice guy from a real, like really one of the toughest neighborhoods. And this is kind of, you know, 30 years ago in the Bronx, you know, not hipster Bronx, you know, this is like tough Bronx. And so he's at our house, and, you know, I grew up in the suburbs outside Philadelphia, and, you know, he's like, you know, I feel like, how do you live here? And we're like, you know, what are you talking about? So, you know, it's fine. He's like, I hear like an owl. I hear like, there's like a rabbit, there's like wild animals outside. And we're like, from like the murder capital of New York, you know, yeah. What do you mean? Yeah. But the point is, like, you know what you know. And so, yeah. You know, we have investors who look at a house and they say, man, like, I wouldn't want to live in this part of the city. This is tough. And I'm like, hey, look, your renters may feel differently. If you work in West Atlanta, you probably want to live in West Atlanta and you want to be on the bus stop. Whereas, look, I have three kids and I like that I've got a yard and all those different things. But, you know, people, if you don't have kids, you don't want a yard. It's just an extra space to have stuff go. So, you know, kind of having that customer focus and kind of thinking through it and accepting that, you know, other people might have a different frame for how they look at what they want than you do.
Well, one of the things that kind of hits, well, it brings back some memories for me is when I used to flip houses, you're not going to live in there, right? So
right.
Just make it like everybody else, every other house around there, because you're not going to live there. Don't over rehab it. Don't over this, don't over that. Right. And then you're still going to sell it. So
exactly.
You're not going to live there. Make sure that, you know, whoever your client is going to be, it fits their client. You're not your own client.
Yeah.
You know, so super cool. Awesome. So we got pretty good stuff, Frank. I appreciate that. This has been very interesting for me. Anybody out there who's got some, go check out the website, Pat Split. See if you have some properties where Frank, they service. I mean, some areas where they service. Yeah. Go check it out. See, maybe you guys can do some business together. What do you got for the plan for the future? I mean, what are the markets are on the horizon?
Yeah. So we, by the end of 2022, I mean, call it a year ago this time, we were just in Atlanta. We opened another 7 markets this year. And, you know, we're going to do, you know, we're kind of looking to kind of triple or so in size this year is at least the plan. You know, we need to actually make it happen, but we won't be in every market by the end of 2022, but I think we'll be broadly coast to coast. So in select markets, we're willing to go into new markets. It's just a matter of kind of having a plan around it. And part of that's just, we want people to be set up for success. So we're usually pulled in by investors to say, hey, I mean, Richmond's a good example. You know, that investor called me, you know, 2 years ago and said, hey, I'm really interested. When are you coming to Richmond? I'm like, well, I haven't really thought about it. It's like, what's it going to take? How much do I have to commit? Let's make it happen. And here we are. And it's done really well. So yeah, I mean, we're certainly kind of throughout the Sun Belt and Midwest. We'll be probably in a limited couple places in the Northeast. The regulatory side can be a little bit more challenging in say New York City. Same thing for the West Coast. But yeah, I mean, so call it the next, right now we're kind of all Texas, Florida, Georgia, Virginia, Indiana, or New Orleans, and just kind of branching out from there. It's kind of Mountain West.
Yeah. I don't see anything in North Carolina, man. I live in Raleigh-Durham. Good market. So,
yeah, it really is. And we've looked at, you know, certainly Raleigh-Durham and Charlotte. Yeah. And
Greensboro, Winston-Salem.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got a few irons in the fire there, but yeah, nothing live today. So I don't know. Maybe that could be maybe the first. So yeah, like those markets a lot. And yeah, I think it just works. For us, it's just a matter of having an investor who's kind of pulling us through on the other side.
Super cool. Awesome. So Frank, appreciate you doing the introduction. So we're done with the introduction. Now let's get to the part of the show.
All right. Perfect.
Actually, my shows go about 20 minutes, 25, and we've been at it for almost over 35 minutes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, very, very, very interesting. But it does bring me to the best part of the show, which is my favorite part.
All right.
All right. So this is what I called the Naked Truth Roulette.
Oh, no.
So we're going to ask Frank three random questions. Got nothing to do with real estate, nothing to do with business. And hopefully it's right before Christmas. He doesn't have to sleep on the couch. He mentioned the couch a few times.
Yeah, no guarantees.
So, all right. So let's go. Let's start.
All right.
Make a truth roulette and let's roll. First question for Frank. Let's see what we got. All right. It's going to be an easy one. All right. What is your favorite quote?
My favorite quote is from Friedrich Nietzsche, and I'll butcher it, but it's that we always talk about the courage of our convictions, but it's really the courage to challenge our convictions that counts. So it's all about, you know, everyone's got an opinion, but, you know, it's more about the flexibility and kind of questioning yourself that matters.
All right. That's a pretty deep quote there. That's good.
Me, you know, deep.
Awesome. All right. Second question. Let's go. Let's roll here with the Naked Truth Roulette. All right. What is the craziest thing you've ever sneaked into a movie theater?
Yeah, I guess beyond myself, you know, I had a couple buddies who worked at the local Regal in Newtown Square, Pennsylvania. And we used to always kind of, I don't think I paid for a movie during high school. So, you know, I was relatively, other than, of course, that sort of theft that I just mentioned, you know, I wasn't really seeking anything too crazy. I think we would probably just bring in sandwiches and stuff for food. You know, we weren't really have much compunction, but yeah, nothing too crazy. Just
man, I've had like flasks of wine.
Yeah,
I had like a cereal box milk bowl. Like, I mean, it's some crazy stuff.
Yeah, no, I was it's like pretty benign stuff for me, I'll be honest. Okay, pretty awesome. Pretty weak.
Hey, but at least you got some free movies. Free movies.
Yeah,
sure. Can't go bad with free movies. Hey, I paid for a movie and then I got you another movie and then another movie.
Yeah, well, that's back in
the day.
Yeah, that's totally by the book. You know, that's expected. Yep.
All right, let's see what we got here. Last question for you.
If you could,
if you could hang out with a cartoon character, who would it be?
Man, that's a good one. You know, when I think about like the cartoon characters that I grew up with, it's like, you know, Ninja Turtles and Ghostbusters and like, you know, Ninja Turtles, you know, you rewatch it and you're like, these guys were kind of boring and kind of self-righteous. It's like, even though I love Leonardo, you know, that's probably out. Yeah, I don't know. I guess of those. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have said at the time, but like probably Raphael of the Ninja Turtles, because he was kind of the rebel who was the only one with any sort of depth to his character. Everyone else is pretty shallow. And so I don't know. I'm kind of out.
That's good. That's a good choice for you. Good choice. All right, Frank, thank you so much for being a good sport and surviving the naked truth. There is no sound effects, but there usually are some sound effects and claps and stuff and hooray. Any last words? How do we get a hold of you? I know we have your LinkedIn page, some social media. It'll be on the show notes, but anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, certainly. Anyone go to our website anytime and, you know, you create an account. Someone from our much more helpful and informed, you know, sales team will reach out, or you can reach out to me directly. I'm just frank@padsplit.com. I'm easy to find. So, you know, I can't hide from anybody. So yeah, reach out. Happy to talk through if we're a fit for you and go from there. But thanks so much for having me.
Frank, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate you being on here. I know it's the holidays is actually going to come out within a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And so happy Merry Christmas to you. Happy New Year. And guys, check out his the website, padsplit.com. Go check out what they're doing. It's pretty, pretty interesting. So thank you again, Frank, for being on. I'm Javier Hinojo, your host. Don't lose your shirt. I got a great gift for you guys. It is my underwriting calculator. That's what I use to underwrite multifamily for heavy value add. You're going to get a great discount because it takes a lot of work. And I have a calculator that'll help you underwrite something that's more stable, a prettier property with videos, not just multifamily, but I also have a calculator for you for mobile home parks, help you underwrite a value add or a property that's stable. I also have a calculator for you for self-storage. It'll help you evaluate a self-storage, value add, or self-storage that is already stable. And it has videos. We underwrite 50, 60 properties every single week. So my acquisitions team is pretty good at it. I want to give that to you for free for following me on the podcast, for being a loyal listener. I want to give that back to you. It's taking a lot of time and energy to put these together. So in that link, you'll see in the show notes, we'll give that away for free. It's actually a deal submission form. You can skip all that and go to the bottom and you'll see the calculators. But if you want to submit a deal to us so we can help you underwrite it, maybe we partner, feel free to use it. Make sure you analyze properly so you don't lose your shirt.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.